This is Through the Badlands Podcast, and I am Luke Farrow. This has been the 11th episode of this podcast, and I just want to give a huge thank you for all the listeners and support I've been getting. And anyway, that's basically it. I just want to say thank you before we get started. This podcast is with the legendary Chris Hatchett. Enjoy. This is Through the Badlands Podcast with adventure photographer, international man of mystery, Chris Hatchett. He's a filmmaker and freelancer. Chris, how's it going?
Man, it's going good. Enjoying being back stateside for a bit. How goes it in your world?
Pretty good. I saw your pictures on Facebook of your trip to Iceland. I'm like, dude, let's do another podcast.
Yeah, man. No, we did Iceland, Faroe Islands, and the Scottish Highlands for about 3.5 weeks, and it was absolutely insane.
Was it just you that went, or was it like a photography team? What happened?
No, it was. I was hoping it would be more than me that just went. But yeah, no, it ended up being just me. I had a friend stateside who's also a producer. She came and tagged along with me in the Faroes and helped me shoot some 360 stuff because that's kind of like what she specializes in. But yeah, for the most part, it was just me. In Iceland, it was me and my camper van. In Scotland, it was me and my SUV. And in the Faroes, it was us in a little mini car.
And, awesome, man.
Yeah, it was pretty insane. I've been to Iceland numerous times. I'm madly in love with Iceland. And it was just another opportunity to explore further, go places I haven't quite been yet, because you could go probably to that country 4 or 5 times and still not see everything, just because depending on the time of year you go and depending on where you go and how many days you have, it's just impossible to, you know, see everything in just a week.
Yeah, what was your goal for you going out there, or like, why did you go out there?
So it was kind of a trifold agenda. One of it was just like a personal creative sabbatical. I've told many of people, and I've even written a couple blogs about the importance of taking creative sabbaticals, which are different than vacations, because they're just kind of a chance you go somewhere that you don't quite know, but you know well enough to be comfortable and to just get away and spend a lot of time in silence and just kind of evaluating your goals, like what you accomplished this year, what you want to accomplish next year. And to do that in a place like Iceland, I couldn't have imagined a better place to do that. So that was one angle. The second angle, there's a couple of my sponsored brands that I wanted to get content with their gear in beautiful locations. So they had asked me to get together some content. So I went out there to do that. And then the other part of it was to up my stock library of content that I could sell. Because if you do it right, you can make plenty of money to recoup all of your costs from the trip, and then to be able to also put money in your pocket to go on the next trip.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the three-pronged trifecta of awesome that was the trip.
So you definitely didn't stop like being creative and doing photography and filmmaking when you were there. Like you just kind of expanded on that. And how did the scenery and the locations did that like influence your creative outlet? Or maybe
You can't go somewhere. I mean, there's other places like Iceland, but you can't go somewhere like that that has beautiful scenery, that has, you know, just this surreal environment and not be creatively inspired. Granted, you can get absolutely creative and inspired in your backyard. But for me, where scenically it's different, in, like even down to the way that the lighting is there, you know, because at 60, at 64 degrees latitude to 66 degrees latitude, the sun is never directionally overhead. So you always have directional shadows. You always have different light than you do here in the U.S. So just from those little differences alone, you get a whole different look than if you were just to go up somewhere like Colorado, Utah, Wyoming. The scenery is just different, you know?
Yeah.
The landscape, and one of the things I've observed and told people about when they've asked about Iceland is the landscape changes every 30 to 45 minutes. I mean, you'll be in one area that's flat. It's covered in like lava rocks. It's black. Most people would say that's ugly. I think that it's actually quite beautiful because you can do a lot with color contrast. You can shoot stills that on first glance looks black and white, but then when you kind of punch in and look closer, you realize that it's in color. It's just a landscape that's black and white. But then you drive 30 minutes east, and you go around this mountain pass, and then it opens up into this almost Martian-esque looking world of these really knobby rocks covered in green moss. And it's just these lumpy looking rocks for as far as you can see. And then you go around another pass and it opens up and now it's snowy and there's glaciers just kind of cresting out from in between mountains and there's snow on top of the mountains. And it's all within, you know, an hour's drive where now you've just gone through three completely different landscape looks that are just an hour apart from each other, you know?
Oh, so let's jump back a little bit. What was your pre-production like before you even left for Iceland? Like, did you have goals or maybe like a map that you knew you wanted to shoot at these locations?
Yeah, so I've been to Iceland a few times and I always kind of save places. I'm part of a couple of Facebook groups of Iceland explorers that everybody kind of help shares their really cool spots that you can download as a Google map. So there's some places that I'd been that I wanted to go back and reshoot. Like for example, some of the waterfalls in the south part of the island. I took my Mavic 1 on my last trip and I was just so, so heartbroken, disappointed with the quality of the footage I got. And I'm like, okay, I just got a Mavic 2 with a Hasselblad camera and I'm like, I'm going back to reshoot it, you know? So I had some spots already picked out and then I had some new spots that I had not yet been to that I wanted to go as well. So pre-production, it was kind of more or less, you know, finding a good priced airfare, first of all, to get over there. And then finding the spots that I wanted to go and dividing up how I would use my time to get there. And to be honest, I didn't make it quite to all of them, but I made it to enough of them to where, you know, I got quite a bit out of the trip.
What kind of gear did you all take with you? Was it mostly kind of smaller stuff or?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually posted my gear loadout on Instagram before I left. And I just had my, I had my Mavic 2 Pro. I had my A7 R2. I had a few hard drives plus my G-Tech 4 terabyte RAID that I brought along with me, which that was kind of a mistake. I never used it to back anything up. I should have backed things up, but power solutions while I was on the go was kind of limited. So my hard drive, that large drive, just had a suitcase most of the trip. But then I also had a couple Gorilla tripods so I could, you know, have the wrap things around. I ended up buying a new tripod while I was there because I realized it wouldn't always work at the height that I wanted it to. So I found a camera shop in Akureyri and I popped in and picked up a carbon fiber Schlage tripod, which was great. This thing was super light. It was great for hiking around with. And then I had my Sony G-Master 70-200. I had an 18mm super wide for some of these like really sweeping vista shots. I had a GoPro with a suction cup because I wanted to shoot some time-lapse driving through Iceland that I'll cut into a recap video whenever I have time to sit down and edit it. But yeah, overall gear was pretty minimal, you know. I took a ton of gear, and I didn't use it all. Actually, too, another piece of gear that I brought that's definitely worth mentioning is I brought my Rhino Evo slider. I didn't have the turning head add-on. I do want to get that, though, the pan head. But I just brought the little, I have the 4 foot, you know, more substantial heavyweight one, but I just shrunk it down to the 2 foot on carbon rails and threw that in my pack and schlepped that around, to help me get some sliding and motion shots, which I was hoping to get some shots, some slider shots of the Northern Lights. But the one time that I, or the two times that I saw them, I was away from where my, slider was and didn't want to hike all the way back to get them. I just kind of seized the moment and shot them there. So yeah, I took minimal gear. And for anybody going over there, I definitely recommend traveling lightly, because you'll just get completely, I mean, unless you want to spend a lot of money on baggage fees, bringing all the things is not really worth it. And the lighter, the more nimble, the better.
Did you do any editing when you were there?
Yeah, you know, I edited stills. I didn't get to editing videos, just because, to be honest, I'm I'm really, you know, man, I'm one of the worst video editors out there, I think. I'm great at being able to communicate to an editor my vision, but cutting my own stuff, it takes me such a long time to do because I get discouraged with, you know, how the edit looks. So I edited my photos almost daily because I was trying to keep fresh content coming out, but I just didn't. I didn't cut any of the video content so far.
What did you edit on?
I use Lightroom mostly for compositing shots. I'll pull things into Photoshop, and like if I shoot any HDR stacks, I'll bring them into Photoshop. Although, I think a release or two ago, Lightroom now gives you the option to where you can select all three of your bracketed stacks and right-click on it and just tell it to merge, and it'll give you an HDR merge, which is great because then you can just stick with doing everything in Lightroom.
Yeah, did you just, I don't know, like an Apple laptop or something like that?
Yeah, so I had my my MacBook Pro 17-inch I bought the one when I upgraded to the Touch. I bought the one that was fully clocked out because I just knew I wanted something powerful, especially editing, you know, 4K footage and drone stuff. I wanted something that had a little bit of horsepower to it. So yeah, that was, I had that, and then I had my my iPad Pro, which I actually lost. I left it. I left it on my Iceland Air flight going from Glasgow back to Keflavik, which I was pretty bummed out about. I'm still trying to track it down, so I'll keep you guys posted on the whereabouts of my iPad Pro. But yeah, as far as like computing gear, yeah, that was another thing that I brought with me too, were those two items.
Have you tried using the Lossia hard drives, like the orange ones?
Yeah, that's actually the main brand I use. Although I'm a real, real big fan, what I used on this trip, and especially because of its size, was the small GTEC SSD. I got a 2 terabyte GTEC SSD that has a screaming fast transfer rate because it's USB-C to USB-C. I think it clocks in under, I think it's like 996 megs a second, so almost a gig. Wow. Transfer speed. I use that, and what's great is, you know, yes, I have room on my internal, you know, SSDs on my MacBook, but should I ever run out of that, need extra space, and still want to be able to edit in real time off of that, that little hard drive is a dream. I use it pretty much on every project I have.
What's the size of it, like the actual physical size?
It's about the size of a business card.
Wow.
Yeah, it's tiny. But so it has two, it has a plus and a minus, a real obvious one, right? It's small, so you can literally fit it in your pocket, but it's also small, so you can literally lose it in a bag. So
yeah,
it's kind of, you know, you need to have a dedicated pouch for it in whatever your camera bag is, so you know where it is at all times. Because I've had that panic mode, because those, it's great technology, but it's not the cheapest technology on the market. So I had a couple panic moments where I'm like, oh, where did I put, dang it, where did I put an 800 hard drive, you know? So yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you have to be diligent about where you're leaving it, because otherwise you'll be not in a good spot.
What were your some of your favorite locations that you shot at? Or maybe same, like, gathered photos or videos or whatever.
You know, what really surprised me, I knew what to expect in Iceland because I'd been there before. Mm-hmm. What I didn't expect was the Faroe Islands. So for those that are listening that don't know, the Faroe Islands are a chain of volcanic islands that are kind of positioned between Iceland and Scotland. So I found a really cheap fare. I think I paid like $100 from Reykjavik to Vegar Airport, which is the only airport in the Faroes, for around $100. So I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to go to the Faroes. I'm going to go. You feel remote. There's a lot of places in Iceland where you just feel by yourself, not another soul in sight. You are all on your own. There's even more of that in the Faroes, and it's such a tiny country. I mean, you can drive clear across the country and back in 2 hours. So it only takes an hour to drive across the whole country. Wow. There's only about 20,000 people there. This time of year they do, whale hunting, which a lot of people are like really quick to judge and be like, oh, you shouldn't hunt whales, but nothing grows in the island. Like, they don't have a farming industry. They grow potatoes and minor, you know, vegetables and stuff, but you can't really be a vegan and live in Faroe Islands just because there's just not much for you. It's a lot of fish, but they ban commercial whale fishing. However, there's one time of year where they go hunting for pilot whales, and they have like a specific way that they're supposed to, you know, terminate them. That's ethical. And then what they do is they give away all of that whale meat and all of the whale blubber and distribute it for free to the villages, so people will have something to survive the winter eating. And they dry them out, turn it into jerky, and they'll process them very different ways. But they use all of it. And so being able to witness the culture was extremely surprising, because, again, walking into it blind, you had no idea what to expect. But some of the architecture and some of the structures and some of these little towns, like, I stayed in a town called Saxon, and I was talking to my Airbnb host, and I said, so how many people live here? And he just kind of laughed, and he said, about 7, you know? And there's so much hiking to where you can just get away and be so remote that it's just you, beautiful nature, and your thoughts, you know? Yeah. Some of my favorite shots that I got in the entire trip came from the Faroes. I mean, we stayed in this 600-year-old cabin that was like right in the ocean, that looked that was kind of in this fjord. And you had mountains surrounding you on both sides, and had beautiful views of the fjord at sunset with Tillamahogar, which is this, it's kind of like a triangular rock. It's very distinguishable. It's Google Faroe Islands, you'll probably see that in almost every shot. They just have real jagged mountains that'll just, you know, it looks like the whole mountain was just cut in half, and that half that's cut is just this jagged edge that drops, you know, 1,000 feet straight into the ocean, you know. It's a very, very unique landscape. Every bit as unique as Iceland, but it has its own Faroese flair to it, if you will. It's there's just some really, I think some of my best breathtaking moments were found there.
Yeah, it kind of looks like Game of Thrones in a way.
Very much, man. It's like this surreal, like Game of Thrones meets Lord of the Rings, you know? Yeah. It's kind of similar to the South Island of New Zealand, but positioned in the North Atlantic instead of the South Pacific.
Right. So how long were you gone?
I was gone about 3.5 weeks. It felt like it was 1 week. I kind of, I was on the flight back to the U.S. and I'm like, man, is it already over? Like, I was a little bit depressed, you know, because it did not feel like 3.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So I saw a picture of you sitting at an Airbnb and they cooked like a meal for you. It looked like a big meal.
Yeah.
what was that like? Can you tell me about that experience?
Yeah, so that was my first night there. Our flight, so I was supposed to leave out of Reykjavik, which is great because, like, if you've never been to Iceland, you fly into a town called Keflavik, and then you have to pay like $44 US for the fly bus, which is a big, you know, charter bus, has Wi-Fi on it, comfy seats, and it drives you about an hour and some chains to Reykjavik. Well, flying direct from Reykjavik, it was great because, like, minimal security. It was, you know, getting to the plane was a breeze. And then it's about an hour and 10 minute flight to Vegar. Well, I got a phone call that morning, or a text message that morning from the airline saying, hey, the flight's been significantly delayed. You're not leaving at 10 this morning. Now you're leaving at 5 in the evening. I'm like, okay, great. I'm going to go explore the city some more. So I get in that night, and apparently my Airbnb host looked me up or Googled me or something, and they thought that I was like a famous, like, American person. Like, not sure why, but she had called the entire little neighborhood, like, neighborhood, kind of like village that they lived in. It was very small, kind of north of the capital city of Tórshavn. And they'd gathered everybody, and they made this like 6-course meal for me. And I got in like super late. So they had been kind of, you know, waiting around, and I had communicated. I said, hey, you know, I'm not going to get in this afternoon like I'd planned. I'm going to get in closer probably to, you know, 9:30 or 8 o'clock at night. And so I get in, and it was a little bit of a drive too. It was like, you know, maybe 30 minutes from the airport. And so I get in, it's windy as all get out. Like, I mean, I got blown over twice trying to like roll my bags up the stairs to get to their house because their house sat on the side of this hill. But I finally made it in, got my shoes off, and there's all these people in the living room. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And they're like, oh, you know, we've prepared a meal in your honor. And I'm like, in my honor? Okay, cool. What are we having? Because I'm starving, you know? And we had, like, the first course was dried whale meat with, like, these little thin squares of whale blubber. And I'll be real, real honest with you, Luke. Whale meat was a delicacy to eat. I don't think I would just, you know, go to the store and buy it on the regular. It was extremely salty and extremely fishy. The blubber was not so bad. I tried the blubber by itself. I was like, oh, this is, you know, I could tolerate this. It really didn't have much of a taste to it. It was just kind of a filler food. But mm-hmm. They had this deal, like, they were like, okay, let me show you how to make this. So you take the dried whale blubber, or you take the dried whale meat, which was kind of a dark, like, brownish black. You put it down on the plate. Then you take a few squares of the whale blubber, put it on top of that. And then you take a cracker and put it on top of that. And it's like a little hors d'oeuvre. And they had gotten that from, you know, the last harvest. But also her husband, he's a fisherman, because that's pretty much what everybody does there. And so he had gotten this, I can't remember what kind of fish it was, maybe a trout or something, but it was probably maybe 3 foot long, and he had dried it, and they had, the next course was like dried fish with this, like cream sauce that you put on top of it. And then the main course was this, it looked like a sockeye fish that, they had just the fish like bones. And then they had the fillet on top of it. Kind of how, you know, they prepare a lobster, you know, with its shell and then the meat's on top of the lobster. And, it was delicious. I can't remember like the rest of the stuff that we had, but it was just all these little, you know, eating a multi-course meal, I thoroughly enjoy because you get filled up, but all the portions are real small, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we sat around and drank wine and shared stories. And there was families that had moved there from Greenland. There are some families that had grown up there. And we were all talking about, you know, American culture and like stereotypes of America. versus, you know, Faroese culture and stereotypes there. And it was one of the best welcomings I've ever had to a new country in my entire life. I definitely will expand more about that in my blog once I can go through all of my travel notes and kind of form my thoughts. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was crazy.
Do you normally eat like weird food? Like, so that was like not totally out of the normal, or was this kind of like your first experience, like eating some sort of odd food, like whale and blubber and all of that stuff?
You know, I'm kind of an in-betweener. There are people out there that eat much weirder food than I am. I'm pretty adventurous. When it comes to me and food, as long as it like smells fine, I'm good with it. But if it puts off a weird odor or weird smell, I'm probably not going to touch it. Like, I have no problem eating whale and whale blubber, but I also at the same time will not eat or try oysters. It's a texture thing, you know? So to answer your question, I don't know. Like, I'm kind of in between. There's some things that I'm like, yeah, you know what? Screw it. Like, when in Rome, let's try it. And then there's some cultures that I've been to where it's rude if you don't try the food. So then you're kind of obligated and culturally forced into it in a way. And you just take like a little bite, and then, you know, if it's good, you swallow it. If you don't, you spit it into a napkin, you know, and be very incognito about it. I'm mostly an adventurous eater. I'd like to consider myself an adventurous eater. It really just depends.
Was your main focus to capture like nature shots and film, or did you also kind of like take shots of the town and maybe even people there?
Yeah, you know, people there are interesting to photograph because at least in Iceland, yeah, no problem, because it's such a tourist hotspot right now that you have such a blend of people. But in the Faroes, yeah, people don't really like their photo being taken. Actually had a guy, I took his photo. He was prepping his fishing boat to go out. And he got off his fishing boat and came over to me and asked me to delete his photo. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. He's like, that's actually not so a bad photo of me, but I'd like for you to delete it because you didn't ask my permission. And I was like, oh, well, can I take your photo? And he said, nope, have a good day. Cheers. Like, all right, then. I never found out why. I asked a couple of my Airbnb hosts and stuff, and I was like, is it a cultural thing? Is it like, you know, the Native American Indians here in the States, you know? And they said, no, it's not a cultural thing. It's just, you know, people are a little bit more closed off than in other countries. So, my goal there was mostly to shoot landscape stuff, because that was kind of some of the stock photos that I was wanting to sell. And through a couple of the stock agencies that I do licensed content to, that was one of their asks, was they wanted some landscapes.
Okay, cool. Sorry, one second. I took a bite of a bar then.
You're all good. You can just edit that part out.
I got hungry talking about the whale blubber and stuff.
Dude, you got to try it. It's good shit.
Yeah. Isn't blubber just fat?
Yep, it's just fat. But it fills you up, you know. But it's not real gristly. Like, it's not like if you ate fat off of a steak, you know. It's not chewy, chewy, chewy fat, you know. And especially the fact that it's served thin, it kind of melts in your mouth like butter, you know.
So you said it was a creative sabbatical. What did you learn, like, after everything got over with and done, and now you're back in the States?
Well, you know, one of the things that I've always like personally struggled with when I'm shooting is overthinking the shots and like having like such an agenda. I think that if you're out in nature shooting, I think the first goal I would recommend to people, from what I learned from my experience, is go explore. Make exploring your priority. Don't worry about your shots right away, because as you're exploring, the shots will come to you. It's kind of like trying to fish, right? You can't just throw your line in the water and immediately catch a fish. It's not how it works. You have to kind of rest in the moment and just be there. And maybe you're sitting on the side of a cliff, taking a break from a hike and drinking water, and all of a sudden the clouds part and this beautiful, you know, God rays from the sun pop out from underneath the clouds and just rake across the ocean and the mountains. Well, there's your shot. It just came to you. So going into it with the mindset of, okay, I'm just going to walk around and wander around and explore and observe. I think people oftentimes when they go out to shoot nature, they see these shots in a magazine or in a travel brochure or on someone's blog. And they're like, I want to go there and take that shot. And I'm guilty of that too. There's some shots that I'm like, oh, I want to go shoot that, but I want to shoot it in a different way. You get so focused on the shots that you miss like being in the moment. I think landscape photography is intended, again, this is just my opinion, but I think landscape photography is intended of an observation of the environment around you, not a manipulate the environment around you to make it happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
So go and explore and then just capture what you see. You know, some shots will turn out great. Some shots will turn out terrible. But if you go to kind of capture what you've witnessed, and again, you can have the most awesome camera out there on the market, but a camera is still not going to be a true reflection of what you see. So as you're shooting, make sure you take time to pause, put away your camera, and just look around with the camera that you were born with. You know, you're shooting 3D, it's stereoscopic, and then store it on the memory drive of your brain. You know, it's not always about, you know, seeing these places just staring through the viewfinder and a camera the whole time. Put it, get your shot, but then like put it away and then just be in the moment.
Yeah, I do the same thing for field recording. Like, I kind of have to tell myself, like everything I do, like, just take a minute and, like, just hear what's around me and then adjust my microphones accordingly to what I hear. And that is, like, been a huge help for me. And also, like, it is kind of going back to what you were saying is, like, being prepared, like visually or sonically or whatever that might be. And I kind of think of it as like a photographer or maybe even like a hunter, where I need to be prepared. I need to have my gear, and then those things come first, and then I can start recording.
Right. Well, and two, like oftentimes, like if you're doing a shoot, you have like a very specific shot list. When I travel, I never have a shot list. I have like a roundabout thing of like, oh, you know, I would love to shoot. I would love to get some shots of the Northern Lights. I would love to get the shots of some snow-capped mountains. I would love to get some shots of the glaciers. But it's very vague to where, okay, if I get shots of glaciers at Skatafell, it's no different than if I get shots of glaciers out at Jökulsárlón. You know, like I got a shot of a glacier and that's what I wanted. It doesn't matter like where I go, you know?
Right.
And so that leaves you the freedom to put on your explorer hat and just go, you know what? I'm going to drive here. And even too, like the fact that I camped and I did the camper van versus, you know, pre-booking Airbnbs at, you know, different spots along the route, the Highway 1. That gave me even more freedom because then I was like, you know what? I want to sit here and watch a sunset from this spot. And then I'll go find a campsite somewhere. You weren't tied to, oh, man, I've got to get to this Airbnb and check in by this time. And at that point, then I'm on somebody else's schedule, not mine. And that's not where I want to be. You know, I want to be on my own time and my own schedule. So if I do find that moment that I want to live in for that specific period of time, whether it's, you know, a couple hours for a sunset or a couple hours for a sunrise, I could do that.
Yeah. Is there any other things that you have taken from your creative sabbatical and that you can apply to your life? Maybe like tips for other people that you learned?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think part of, you know, and this kind of speaks to like the American audience, but so oftentimes we get wrapped up in this hustle and bustle and, you know, get stuff done, onto the next project, and it's just go, 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 go. Being able to slow down gives you a much easier perspective to view the world through that lens. It's kind of like if you're driving a car at 200 miles an hour, how quick can you make a turn at 200 miles an hour? How quick can you adjust your course at 200 miles an hour? Versus if you are driving 50 miles an hour and you see something in the road ahead and you want to swerve to miss it, well, now you have time to observe it, to see it, and to address it before it even comes to you. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I appreciate the most about going over there. There's no, like, nobody runs on a time schedule. You know, if an Icelander tells you, yeah, I'm going to be here at 1530, what they really mean is they're going to be there at 1600. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's island time. And that goes the same for a lot of cultures across the world. But just not having an agenda and not having such this go, 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 it was just a real breath of fresh air from the hustle and bustle of, you know, bouncing project to project. So being able to take that time to kind of slow your speed down, that gives you a chance to see things that are dangerous up ahead, you know? And two, yeah, man. Being able to openly and honestly communicate with people in different cultures, it's eye-opening, really. I had probably one of the best conversations I think I've had with a foreign individual with my Airbnb host and some of her friends in Edinburgh. We started up a chat at probably 9 o'clock in the morning, and before you knew it, it was, you know, dinner time, and we've still been talking all this time and not even paying attention to like where the day went, and it was totally fine. You know, mm-hmm. We had differing perspectives, and most of the conversation was easing stereotypes, and easing, you know, stereotypes on both sides of the pond, really. And it was just really refreshing. So being able to not just go there as this voiceless observer, but being able to plug in, being able to step away from all the touristy places and go where the locals go, have a beer with the locals, get to know somebody, strike up a conversation. A little harder to do in the Faroes, but actually met some people that were on holiday as well. And, you know, we trekked around, and they happened to be photographers as well. And so then, before you knew it, we had this big group. You know, I met these guys from the UK that were photographers, and they were literally riding around on bicycles that they shipped over there from the UK, and they were camping and hiking around, you know. And so, like, being able to plug in with other cultures, I mean, now I've got actual friends that I keep in contact with that I've met over there. Now I've got places to stay. Now I've got people I know to where if I go back, I'm not a stranger anymore. And I think for those that are listening, you know, when you go somewhere, I mean, I think I would have these two immediate approaches. Number one, observe, like look around, like see, like discover, but also to engage. A lot of people love when people come over and they engage and they make friendships with them, you know, buy somebody a pint at a bar, you know, like just chat somebody up, and you'll have a totally different experience there if you just go and live behind your camera the whole time. I think by the time I even got to the UK, being that, you know, number one, I was getting used to driving on the wrong side of the car on the wrong side of the road, but also they didn't have as many scenic pull-offs on the carriageways that you did in Faroes and Iceland. So you had these vistas, but I'm like, dang it, I can't stop and pull over because there's nowhere to pull over. I didn't hardly shoot in Scotland. I mostly kind of drove around and hiked around and just spent the majority of my time. Went to some of the old castles there, checked out. I did a cruise on Loch Ness where we went looking for the Loch Ness monster, you know, just all these different things that I just kind of gotten burnt out on living behind my camera. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to kind of be here in the moment and experience this place I've never been. And that was every bit as fulfilling as getting a really, really sick shot perched on top of the mountain cliff somewhere, you know?
Yeah, that's great. I think a lot of people are jealous, including me, for not going and seeing all your cool photos and vlogs you would do.
So, you know, there's a way to fix that, you know, the whole jealousy thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking a group, and I haven't posted this on my Cinema Adventure page yet, so I guess you and your listeners will get first dibs. But I'm taking a group back to the Faroes in May. And we're going to go for a week. I'm still working on pricing to try to make it, you know, really affordable for folks. But one of the things I learned is when I was there, I booked all these different Airbnbs all over the island thinking, you know, oh, this place is much bigger than what it really was. And it wasn't. So we're going to stay in these cluster of these four cabins that sit right on the fjord, right outside Bjork. And the sun sets every night between these two mountains that open up into the Atlantic. It's a crazy, crazy view. So we're going to stay there and we're going to explore the island together. And we're going to shoot and we're going to shoot whatever anybody wants to shoot, we're going to shoot it. And we're going to explore the islands in Faroes together for a whole week. So that'll be going up live on my Cinema Adventure page here within the next couple weeks as far as like more info and stuff. But the quickest way to get over the jealousy is to just come with, you know?
Yeah. Anything you want to plug before we head out?
Yeah. So if you want to, tag along with my next journeys, I'm not sure what's next on the plate yet, but if you guys want to tag along, definitely go to, follow me on Instagram at I am Chris Hatchett, or you can follow my Cinema Adventure page, which is just beauty shots and nothing else at, it's just at Cinema Adventure. So much. Hey, have a great one. DVENTURE. Or you can also visit my website at www.cinemaadventure.co.
Okay. Adventure photographer, international man of mystery, the legend.
Thanks, you too.
Chris Hatchett, let's wrap this up.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. I was totally jealous of Chris's trip, like I said in the podcast, and needed to invite him on to talk about it. Anyway, leave a comment what you learned and benefited from listening to this podcast, and I'm planning to do these every week now, so stay tuned. Thanks.